Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the Olympic Dreams Deferred Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
Oh, I don't know whether to give you an A plus or just like a B, B minus for using a nice word. And tell me, was there a reason why you chose that word that pertains to me? Because I've discussed this in the past.
I know you are a big Langston Hughes fan, Scott.
And huge Langston Hughes fan.
I figured I would cater to the audience knowing that you are the greater here.
Okay, so what happens to a dream deferred? No, raisin in the sun, or does it explode? All right. Well, I guess if you're an NHL player and your dream was to go play in the Olympics right now, it exploded. It didn't fester like a sore. This was a biggie, just sort of like exploded. So A plus, I don't think you can get a literary reference that I really love. And I will tell folks, if you have not read The Dreams Deferred collection by Langston Hughes, I would suggest that if you have some free time over the holiday, a lot of time, you know, people have some time off right now. I know like little people like Obama and Oprah have their book clubs and suggestions. But if you want the Soschnick suggestion, you know, my two that I would suggest, what the heck, we're going off on a tangent. We'll get back to the NHL in a minute.
Let's do it.
But I would definitely suggest Langston Hughes' Dream Deferred Collection and also Letters Home from Vietnam. And you know, that is also one of my favorites because there's always this mindset of, you know, great writers are whatever, you know, the Ivy League and intellectual, you know. No. Go read Letters Home from Vietnam, Letters from Soldiers Home from the Battlefield, and man, but be prepared to be, you know, gut-wrenched, right? Because what I found after like two or three that I'm reading, you really wind up rooting for that particular soldier. You're like, oh man, please tell me this person makes it. Please tell me. And then you find out at the end of the chapter what happened to that person, where they are today, or if they were killed in action. A brutal emotional roller coaster. But just a reminder that great literature, great writing is not synonymous with sort of higher education and degrees. Sometimes it's just simple declarative emotion. And that's what you get out of that. So what the heck are we talking about, Mr. Novy?
Look at that. Gift guide, book club, whatever gift you want guide, to call it.
There you go. Book club, absolutely. But yeah. The NHL, dream deferred. Yeah, 4 more years now, right? So as we are recording, just shortly before we recorded, the NHL and the NHLPA came out and said, no puedo, no can do, not going, just too many COVID hurdles to clear on this one.
Yeah, I don't think you or I or really probably anybody around the NHL is too surprised by this decision. When the NHL and NHL Players Association announced last year that or earlier this year that the Olympics could be in the table on the cards for them, they did so acknowledging that there was a 3-week break, 2.5-week break in the NHL season that might need to be used elsewhere, particularly if some games get canceled because of COVID. And as we are right now, because of Omicron, Scott, more than 50 games have been postponed because of COVID. And as a result, this is what happens. You need to use that open space for NHL games, which are obviously a bigger priority to NHL owners than Olympic games are. But certainly some stakeholders here that I think are going to be pretty disappointed here. Certainly NHL players who had the opportunity, potentially had the opportunity to represent their countries in Beijing. This is a huge bummer. And then also NBC, the Olympics, the hockey portion of the Olympics is one of the most watched parts of the Winter Games in normal years. And losing out on the biggest names, the stars, the people that people know, certainly is going to hurt that from a TV standpoint.
I was looking forward to seeing the Chinese team play to find out simply how epically bad they were. Like, there was talk of not even allowing them to participate because they were that bad. Like, I wanted to see exactly how bad they were. But you're right. I mean, you're going to miss out on the sort of the Russia, Canada, Russia, USA, Sweden, Finland, or that kind of little quartet of dominant teams. You're going to miss out on those games, and those are great games. But other than that, you still do have, you know, you have the skiing, you have the figure skating, also highlights of the games. But if we're talking hockey and cancellations, Mr. Novy Williams, what we really should be talking about is the big youth tournament in Quebec. You know, I mean, this is all about, this is going to be one of these, you know, how does this affect me podcasts right here? You brought it up with Dreams Deferred. But I will tell you that probably maybe even pertains to that tournament even more in the kids, because folks like Gretzky have played in the Quebec Peewee tournament. It's your Peewee major year. It coincides with the Winter Festival in Quebec. You've got teams coming from all over the world, and my son's team is scheduled to go. We're still waiting. If you're reading tea leaves, there was sort of talk the other day about maybe delaying the tournament until May, like instead of going in February. Now, I don't know about you, but if this is really about experience, in a recent chat that I had with Gretzky, he said, make sure your kid stays with a billet family. And if you're not familiar with sort of the lexicon of hockey, that means you stay with a local family, locals, right? You just ship off your kid and stay in the house. You may not know them, obviously, but you go stay with a family and really suck up the culture of the whole thing. And obviously, they usually have hockey playing kids as well, but sometimes not. And because of COVID, I think we were sort of limiting the kids to the hotel. And like, yes, you can go and do, you play one game a day. You've got activities outside with the Winter Festival. I just don't know if it's the same experience. Yes, you'll be playing international clubs, but May is not exactly the cold weather of Quebec and the Winter Carnival. And boy, oh boy, you may not get another chance. You know, my son played in the Brick Tournament in Edmonton a few years ago. They're still the defending champions because they haven't held a tournament since. And they were talking about playing two birth years this year instead of just one to give more kids the opportunity. Yeah, you just may not get this opportunity again because it's solely, in terms of Peewee Quebec, it's solely for the Peewee major birth year. So
you're saying that Connor McDavid can play in the Olympics in 2026 in Italy, but
yes,
the 11-year-olds cannot play in Quebec anytime in the future.
The 12-year-olds can,
except this year.
Yeah, my guess is unless they decide, if it gets canceled completely, unless they try and squeeze, like what the Brick is doing, two birth years into one, I have no idea if that would happen, could happen. No idea. But I will tell you that the number of NHL players who would look back and say one of their fondest memories in hockey is the Quebec tournament, or Tony Peewee, as they say in French, is staggering. It's just one of those things that they really hold in high regard, and we'll see what happens. But Dream Deferred, I do not know.
And to bring it back to kind of, you know, merge these two conversations, one of the challenges I think right now for the NHL is that, unlike the NFL and really unlike the NBA, except for the Raptors, the NHL has a pretty sizable percent of its teams in Canada. And as a result, is kind of dealing with not just the way the U.S. government and the way that U.S. cities and states and their regulations are approaching Omicron and COVID, but also has to deal with the way the Canadian government and different provinces are also approaching it. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing, you know, as we record right now, the NHL is completely shut down until at least Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, one of the two, taking a very different approach than what we're seeing in the other leagues, which are canceling some games, but really trying to keep things on the tracks. I think one of the reasons you're seeing that is because, and you're going to run into it, I think, in Quebec as well with this junior team, is that junior tournament, is that when you're dealing with multiple governments, multiple national federal governments, you have a much harder time at kind of balancing all the restrictions.
And by the way, you're dealing with even more than that. That's the host country, obviously, is Canada. And you're in the province of Quebec, which, by the way, right away said Montreal Canadiens, you can't host fans. So on the NHL level, it'd be hard to welcome. But you've got, literally, it's not even just U.S.-Canada border. You've got teams coming from the Czech Republic, from Scandinavia, from Russia. So you've got kids coming from all over the world. So I'm not sure if anybody is really going to be down for that. And keeping it sort of in the hockey family, I'm trying to look at the data. So Daryl Jones over at Hedgeye, like, he's their data guy. And he was the assistant coach on that Brick team, by the way, for the Connecticut Junior Rangers that my son played on. Yeah, he's looking at the data and he's sort of checking what's happened in South Africa and how you had the big spike and now you're starting to see numbers come down, and how far are we behind South Africa, and is there room for sort of that diminution of infections and hospitalizations and all that. I just don't know when they have, you know, we're talking about mid-February tournament time. Do you have enough time if this thing rages for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks here in the U.S. and Canada, you know, put you on a real hard timeline to trying to figure out what's going to happen a few weeks after that.
So let's expand this conversation to talk about the NFL and the NBA.
Yes.
Because right on that same timeline, Scott, thinking the Super Bowl is supposed to be in Los Angeles, one of, as we've seen at least so far, one of the most restrictive and maybe most proactive states in terms of COVID restrictions. I think it's the exact same weekend that you're talking about, or at least the weekend before. How nervous do we think the NFL is right now? We've seen some games get moved around, pushed to Monday, pushed to Tuesday. A lot of players testing positive. They've changed some of their COVID protocols, I think, to kind of keep things on the tracks a little bit more. How nervous do we think we are, if they're NFL, about the season ending game being in California in about 6 weeks?
Yeah, I would say that I would have been nervous about the players if there was really health and safety concerns. From what we understand, a lot of the players who tested positive were asymptomatic, and they're like, I feel fine. I can play. Everything's fine. So what the NFL is now doing, I believe, is testing symptomatic players, right? So pretty much it looks like, and Adam Silver had just said the other day, hey, we're going to be living with this virus. You know, we just have to learn to live with it. It's not going away. Adam was the trendsetter when the NBA shut down on the Rudy Gobert infection, like that first day, and you thought this would be, all right, 3 months, 6 months, all of a sudden we're years later, and he's saying it's going to keep going. So maybe Adam is the trendsetter again, saying, folks, yeah, we understand health and safety, but we cannot shut down. We're not thinking about shutting down because this virus is going to be around. Get the players vaccinated, and let's see how we roll on. First, you know, you take it in steps. I would say the first thing in the Super Bowl, and you and I know, yes, you want a packed house. It makes for a better experience. But the Super Bowl is a television event. It's a made-for-TV event. The sponsors are happy if you get the commercials. That's the most important thing. If one must play the Super Bowl with no fans in SoFi Stadium, not the ideal, not the perfect, of course, but the NFL would be okay with it. Still getting 100 million, whatever the number is going to be, fans watching at home. You know, no make goods, no anything. You complete your season, you buy yourself more time, and you have your big spectacle.
Someone asked me earlier this week if I thought the NFL, if it was no fans in LA or move the Super Bowl to Tampa, where it was last year, for example, and have fans for the Super Bowl. I still thought and correct me if you think differently, I still thought the NFL would prefer to keep it in LA and maybe not have fans there, as opposed to going through, as you said, because it is a TV event, as opposed to going through kind of all of the hoops to move it somewhere else just so that you could have 60,000 corporate fans in attendance.
I think we have Anthony Noto, the CEO of SoFi, ringing in right now. No, he wants to make sure that SoFi, he said a million times on TV and get all those impressions. I would say 0% chance, like zero, that there's any thought about moving it anywhere else where they would be more likely to allow fans. Again, this is about scale. This is just about scale. And as long as they play it and those commercials are aired and the sponsors get their due. And we're scheduled to have an event out there right now. Of course, we're monitoring the situation. And you were talking about timelines. For me, the first day of Quebec is, for at least my son's projected first game, would be Super Bowl Sunday. So it's all aligning. Everybody. And I wonder how much the youth organizations are watching the pros. And is it like there's a lot of money at stake? I mean, Let's be real. Like, if they cancel that tournament 2 years in a row, that's a lot of revenue loss. Like, it's not easy for them to bounce back, which is why they're probably already working on the contingency plan of playing it down the road in May. But is it the same experience? Do the same teams want to go? It's the same thing on the pro end. Like, you know, what's at risk here? What are we risking? And if they have to play the Super Bowl in an empty stadium, or a reduced crowd stadium, or a reduced masked crowd stadium, whatever it may be, they're still better off because, as we said, this is about the global scale. You've got to get the big game on TV.
And one big difference here, I would think, between kind of the pro leagues we're talking about and youth sports, particularly at a certain age, is that the vast majority of these pro athletes are vaccinated. The NHL, I think, is at 99%. I think Brendan Lemieux might be the only NHL player not vaccinated. The NBA is at 97. The NFL is at 94. I think that the argument, and you saw it from Roger Goodell already, Steve Yzerman, the GM of the Red Wings, made the same case. If athletes who are vaccinated seem to be getting sick without symptoms, that maybe it's time to change the way that we're testing, particularly around consistently testing people who are asymptomatic. I think there's an easy argument to make that change. I think at youth sports, and I actually don't know at the 12-year-old level what vaccination rates are like, but I think that's the big concern at youth level, right? Is that we're not dealing with a player base that is 95 to 99% vaccinated. It's something that's way lower.
No, I'm going to tell you, you know what the vaccination rate will be for players who participate in the Quebec tournament?
100?
100.
There you go.
100.
Okay. I'm wrong, at least on that one.
Yeah. The rules have gone out. No vax, no play. And there are teams, by the way, and we know kids, and I'm not saying right, wrong. There are parents that have made the decision not to get their 12-year-olds vaccinated. And
the Kyrie Irvings of the
youth hockey circuit, exactly. And so their kids can't go, and there are multiples on some teams, and we know the teams that have just simply said, all right, we don't have enough in our entire team, so we're just withdrawing from the competition. We don't have our team. It's really funny to watch. You know, there are kids on those teams that are affected like that who are then scrambling to join other teams because they really still want to go and have the experience, even as it isn't with their core club. But yeah, there are the ripple effects. But if you're going to go, it is one of the conditions of going to play that you must be vaccinated and submit those forms ahead of time. Of course, you'll have to show at the border crossings and all that. So 100% on the youth level, and mainly because there is no players union. And maybe we got to call D. Smith or Don Fear and then say, hey, who wants to represent the 12-year-olds? But
Boy.
Yeah. Hey, we're not far off, right? When we're talking about the dollars.
Probably not, honestly.
We are not far off. But you know, that's one where you say maybe the youth tournament is sort of leading. Just saying it's not up for debate. You've got to be vaxxed if you want to come.
It goes without saying, I think, that the next few weeks are going to be massively telling, I think, both in terms of this is a massive travel, holidays are a massive travel week or two for a lot of Americans in terms of that's how this thing spreads really quickly. But also we're learning more literally day by day about Omicron, its virility, how much worse or how much better it is in terms of symptoms, in terms of hospitalizations, et cetera. Folks, don't get your medical advice from the Sportacast, but there certainly seems as though we're going to learn a lot in the next 2 weeks about how different Omicron is from previous strains of coronavirus and how that is going to affect both professional leagues and youth hockey tournaments moving forward.
I have absolutely no graceful segue from what you just said to discuss a limited stake sale of the Atlanta Hawks. I'm racking my brain. Tony Wrestler. Can we do Dial home court partner? That's what's going through my brain as you were wrapping up, and I'm like, I got nothing.
Well, I give your transition a B-, Scott.
just simply stating I got nothing and saying let's talk about the next thing. So I'll let you tee it up any way you want.
Yeah. So you flicked at it there. Another fairly large private equity investment in an NBA team. News that you and I broke earlier this week. Dial home court, which is the firm, the fund that got kind of special permission originally by the NBA to kind of start this new phase of private equity ownership. They are investing in at least their third NBA team, the Atlanta Hawks. I think the thing that jumps out here to me, Scott, I assume same to you, the valuation on the team, $2 billion for the Hawks, a team that was purchased back in 2015 for $730 million. Not a bad 6-year appreciation there, but $2 billion valuation on the Hawks for yet another private equity deal.
Yeah. Now, give me, what did Bodenhausen have? What did Kurt have on his valuation?
It was slightly less than that. I think it was 1.8, something right in there.
All right. So, and I'm going to ask you, and I don't know if you have the answer. I don't have the answer. And there are smart people in this industry that we've spoken with who come to me and ask the question, and they're asking each other. The one they want to know, the one question they want answered is, how is this good for investors? And I might have to put this on to Brendan Coffey for a story. It's a passive, right? It's a total passive investment. You can't have board seats, none of that. It is a passive investment. You have no say. You're giving them the money, giving them liquidity, letting them put the money to work in the team. Boy, you're really counting on asset appreciation here to continue on that same trajectory. I'm like, to get a private equity-like return on a $2 billion number now, what does the team have to be worth in 5-6 years? $4 billion? Right? Do we think the Atlanta Hawks, based on whether it's media growth, or whatever else the key drivers are going to be, do we project the Atlanta Hawks will grow to be a $4 billion enterprise? I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no. It just seems that we don't know, but you know, this is also always called smart money. And does the smart money know something we don't?
I mean, that's the value prop right there. I mean, that's the question, Scott. It's these are funds, private equity investments that are built around capturing the appreciation. And certainly if you look back in the past 5, 10, 20, 30 years, the appreciation for pretty much any professional, major professional sports team in the U.S. Is pretty massive. So if those trends continue, yeah, you see that. I think the one interesting thing here is that a lot of private equity firms have very strict time horizons for investing and then getting out. Sometimes it's 5 years, sometimes it's 10 years. It seems as though at least a lot of the players that we've talked to in the early stages here in the U.S. sports franchise investment, a lot of them are thinking more long-term. I don't think necessarily we're going to see the 5 year in and out investment horizon that we see from CVC and a lot of the deals that they do. I don't think we're going to see that in the professional sports franchise world as well. I think a lot of these people are thinking about these investments as longer term. I would think that's especially true in the NBA. Given, you know, we talked about this on the show earlier this week about, you know, when, if at all, will the NBA maybe overtake the NFL as the most valuable average franchise in the U.S.? I think for the NFL, the time horizon, particularly because of international opportunities, seems really, really strong in the long term. And I would not be shocked if we see groups like Dial or groups like Arctos hold on to these assets for more than kind of the standard 5 or 10 year period.
All right. Excuse my ignorance and my lack of attention to the Twitter sphere, but you did put out a poll. I'm just curious, where does it stand? Like you kind of asked in the hierarchy of team average values, like NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, MLS, correct? Did I have that right? That
correct.
Okay. Yep. You were asking, which would be, if it changes, and whether it's 5 years, 10 years, like we didn't ask the timeline, but whenever there is a change in the rungs on that ladder, in that order, which league will leapfrog which league? I said I thought it would be MLS leapfrogging the NHL. Even though I love the NHL as a digital property, I just think soccer, World Cup, is ready for a massive, massive growth opportunity here, especially at the demographics of the U.S. change. But that's not a slight on the NHL. What were most people saying? Were they agreeing with Kurt Bodenhausen, who I believe he said the NBA would overtake the NFL?
So the masses are with you, Scott. 60% of the people who have responded,
they're wrong,
have said MLA. I don't know if that makes you happy or makes you a little trepidatious.
I need to see who they are, but right now I'm not comfortable with that
60%
anymore.
Believe that when that order changes, it will be Major League Soccer passing the NHL. The next closest, and it's a big jump, so that's 60%. The next closest is 17% agreeing with Kurt that the NBA passes the NFL as the next change on that rung. And then kind of tied around 12% for both of them is the NHL leapfrogging Major League Baseball, which was my thought, and then MLB leapfrogging the NBA, which to me is kind of the least defendable of the four options. As you look at them here, I'd be fascinated to talk to someone who thinks that at some point soon Major League Baseball franchises could repass NBA franchises as the second most valuable in the U.S. But that's where things are right now. The majority, 60%, believe that at some point the first change here is Major League Soccer passing the NHL.
All right. I'm very happy to put Kurt Bodenhausen up atop the smartest person list right there, me way below. So I believe my pick was his second pick, which is why
that's
I feel
correct.
Kind of comfortable. Like, I, you know, this win, place, and show, I'm on the place, you know, the Bodenhausen placeholder. That's fine by me. I don't feel
I am bad. In show, but just barely.
All right. Well, you're on the middle podium. What are you doing for the holiday, Mr. Novi Williams?
Keeping it local. My folks are down on the Jersey Shore. Be heading down there for a couple days, trying to get out to the cabin for New Year's. We'll see if the weather holds out to be able to do that. But thankful, honestly, that there's not a lot of airplane travel or any airplane travel in my future. How about you guys?
Yeah, I'm glad we're not hopping on any planes either. Sticking local. Wife planned some stuff in the city, you know, so we'll go around. I think there's some skating in Central Park like we used to do when we lived there. Maybe a nice dinner. So hopefully we get a table in the corner away from the sneezing masses. I will ask for that. We'll see. Anyway, have a good one, my friend.
You too, man.
You know, to you, always some fun, and I'll see you on the flip side of this. Or are we doing next week? What? I don't even
we're
know.
Doing we're next gonna, week. Yeah,
we're going to do next week. We're not slowing down.
We will have
down,
a show on Tuesday and a show on Thursday next week for sure. Getting ready for the college football playoff at the end of next week.
Oh, good. I'll worry about that 10 minutes beforehand. Just make sure you let me know what we are talking about. He is Edmund Novy Williams on the Twitter, Novy underscore Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on Twitter at Soschnick. Our social media editor is Cora Veltman. She loves it when I remind you that the show can be found at Sportacast, which is the hub of what will very soon become, announcement coming soon, the Sportico Podcast Network.